The John Schneider Show on Wyman and Bob every Thursday until draft day with Seahawks President of Football Operations, John Schneider.
It is time for the John Schneider Show. We look forward to this each and every week. And joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline is the President of Football Operations and GM of your Seattle Seahawks, John Schneider. How you doing, man?
We're doing good. Got back from Orlando last night and from the league meetings and got up, headed over to the pro day at UW and saw those guys. So it was pretty fun. Pretty cool to see Jed, you know, Coach Fish over there and Brennan and that whole staff that came up from Arizona. And then obviously, you know, all the guys that, you know, Coach DeBoer and Coach Grubb and Huffer and all those guys were coaching. So it's pretty cool to be over there watching all those guys perform. They did a great job.
Hey, well, before we ask you about some of that, I'm just curious at the league meetings, obviously rules are being talked about. We talked to you last week about the hip drop tackle and now they instituted the new kickoff. And that's one, if you haven't watched the XFL, it's sort of hard to picture it, you know, just reading the description. But I'm curious to get your take on it. Is this something you think is going to be exciting? Is it something you're looking forward to, or does it seem a little hokey? How do you feel about it?
No, I think it's going to be exciting. You know, the fact that you know, there's two returners back there. I know there was some concern with some of the special teams coaches with just having the one returner like the XFL has, where, you know, there would be a lot of squib kicks, and it might make the game look a little bit sloppy, and, you know, maybe there would be more injuries, you know, if the ball's bouncing around like that. But the fact that they put the two returners back there, I think, is going to be, you know, be an exciting play. And then, you know, bringing the ball to the 30 was another option they added a bit later. But and then the hip drop, that was like a 32-0, you know, pass. That one went pretty quick.
Still don't get that one.
Yeah. Well, and what about, John, as far as the kickoff return goes? So do you think, you know, the thing I liked is that they were talking about they want to make it a play again. They
Yes.
want to make it so, you know, there is some excitement, because it's been sort of like perfunctory. You just kick it off and it's either, you know, nobody gets a return typically. But this is going to be an opportunity not only for that kind of creativity, but also do you think it will preserve a guy's ability to, on a kickoff team, make the team? You know, it's still a big enough play where, you know, I was afraid if they took away the kickoff and some of the special team plays that some of these guys that make the team because of that, you know, would fall off a little bit. But you think that's going to provide some good opportunities there for guys to make the team?
Yeah, definitely. And it's interesting the way, you know, when you listen to the special teams coaches talk about it, when they're 5 yards apart, the two lines, and then, you know, you don't have that, you know, the space, right, that, you know, we have the speed and space or velocity and space. And just those guys, like, you know, playing hands and, you know, they're going to be using their hands much more. They're going to be, you know, there's not going to be those, obviously we took the wedge out, you know, several years ago, so you're not just going to have that massive impact, but you know, it'd be important to have, you know, returners that can hit it on up there pretty dang quick, because it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a bang bang play, and that's what everybody thought was pretty exciting about. You know, okay, you have the kickoff, all right, you know, nobody's moving until the ball's fielded, and then okay, here you go. So I think it's just going to be like anything else, any change. It's just going to be a period for all of us to get used to. And that's, you know, special teams coaches, head coaches, you know, player personnel, scouting, you know, pro scouting, and how, what that looks like, and who's going to be playing in the certain roles that the coaches want. Like, you know, what do they want, you know, by position for, you know, the different levels there.
So, John, just in, again, reading it, not seeing it, they can't do anything until the ball is fielded. So does that mean the team that's receiving the ball, everybody that's on the line, is going to have their head turned looking back at the ball carrier, at the person who's receiving the ball, and then flip their head around to deal with oncoming traffic, essentially?
Yeah, but you're not – yeah, right. But you know, they're right. You're gonna find your target pretty quick. You know, they're not – it's not like these guys are, you know, have 30 yards or whatever to be running at you, you know, so – yes, there's going to be element of that too. You know, who knows? It may look like a basketball fast break a little bit too, right? So, okay, who's getting the rebound? And here we go. Now we're on a fast break. So, I just think there's going to be so many elements of it. and like I said earlier, I mean, with any change, you're kind of like, all right, well, what? And so, yeah, there was a ton of discussion about it, but yeah, they just decided to go for it, and so yeah, now we'll adjust.
Hey, John. So you're
that's learning. That's learning it too, and you know, learning the different schemes that these guys are going to come up with, and then also, you know, the type of player, the body types that you want out there, whether it's on the kickoff team or the kickoff return team.
Yeah. So, yeah, let me ask you about as far as what you do at the owners meeting. I mean, is there a lot of – are you talking to other GMs and other personnel people and kind of laying groundwork and getting to know everybody, because you guys are going to be communicating here, all the GMs coming up here when the draft comes up. Is there a lot of that for you as well?
Yeah, learning, you know, a couple of the newer general managers and newer head coaches. Yeah, so – and then just – personalities and understanding when you're talking to the general managers, we're, you know, bouncing off a lot of different ideas about, you know, what just happened in free agency and where you see things going and where your team needs are, trade potentials, and and setting up, you know, for the draft, which really we're basically in, you know, what we like to call, you know, phase two of free agency, pre-draft, and now you're, you know, we're gonna have the 30 visits, you know, there's 30 college players that we can bring in for physicals, and have our coaching staff spend much more time with them, and again have them experience the building. So yeah, it's going to be it's moving to that phase where it's like, okay, here it comes. And you know, I think you know, got picked up at the airport last night and they had the radio on. It's like 11:30 and they're like, yeah, well, it's only 5 hours till the draft kickoff. I'm like, oh jeez, here we go. But it's no. I mean, I think it's 4 weeks or whatever. And but it's like just right around the corner. But you know, this just keeps moving. And excited to, you know, have the scouts back in here with their new coaching staff and to be able to get together as a group now that they've been able to get settled and been able to get caught up on some of the draft prospects as well.
So when you bring those guys in, you talk about the 30 guys and you know, physicals and whatnot. Aren't these guys going through that at the combine? Are you guys just doing a more thorough physical, or what's the difference between the medicals at the combine versus what you guys do with those visits?
Yeah, great question. You know, it's a lot of guys that did not get invited to the combine, and then whether or not we want to spend more time learning the person and you know, rechecking a hamstring pull or, you know, a groin, whatever, just have them come in and get another update on whatever injury type they have going on. And it's really trying to get your board as clean as you possibly can. So we have a direction that everybody feels comfortable about. And so, you know, like Matt Perry, Trent, Nolan, everybody does a great job. Aaron Hineland of identifying, you know, what's been going on with these pro days and what we need to do moving forward to gain more information on every single prospect that is going to be on our board.
Hey, John, when you are looking at players, how much do you consult, like, your assistant coaches and your coaches? Like, you know, obviously Mike McDonald and his defense, and, you know, we're talking about Dodson and Baker fitting into his defense, but how often are you talking to those guys? Like, what kind of guys do you need, or is it just, hey, I'm just going to take the best football player?
Oh yeah, that's a constant. That's an everyday process, and being able to just go into, you know, the coaches' offices, and it's been like that ever since, you know, we got here in 2010. Just to be able to kind of go around the building and talk to everybody about, you know, what they like and what's important to them and how they're feeling about their group. Especially with coaches, it's more about when we're talking about draft prospects. It's really most important for us to hear from coaches how they feel about their position group and how they, you know, see a player fitting in more so than it is about, well, you know, this player is, you know, I think this is a third round player, or I think this is a fifth round player. And so it's, yeah, those are constant conversations. You brought up Dodson and Baker. We were talking last week, and I forgot to tell you guys about Baker. We had Dodson upstairs, and Baker, I told you that, but Baker was in Tennessee visiting with the Titans at the same time we were doing that show. And I was like, wait, we were trying to get him out. Like, I sure hope he gets on that plane in Tennessee too. So what a weird show we had that day.
So you're saying your mind
I wasn't
could have
paying
been
attention
elsewhere.
To you guys at all. I'm sorry.
you didn't miss anything. That's okay. Yeah. That's okay. Hey, John, you brought up Washington's pro day and all of that. I'm curious how often in your history in this position that you've maybe gone to a pro day with the idea, okay, I've got these five players or eight players or two players, however many I'm zeroed in on, I want to see them, and then just somebody you didn't even consider catches your eye. Has that happened very often to where they've caught your eye to the point of actually drafting them or signing them perhaps as a free agent?
Oh, yeah. Sure, that happens. That happens, not, I shouldn't say all the time, but it does happen more than you would think. It's usually players that have been injured during the year, or they're late with a rehab, just kind of getting caught up, or, you know, maybe sat out a year and, you know, are invited back to their school's pro day and just have a great workout. And then it's all about asking more questions, you know, from the area scout and the people that have studied the player. And but, you know, hey, a guy can have a phenomenal short shuttle or look great in his DB drills, or, you know, offensive lineman looks great moving around. I mean, I know that's a huge concern, you know, for everybody, but, and I get that, but we're still working at that. I promise we have plenty of time to try to get offensive linemen. But guys stand out all the time, and that's probably the most fun thing about going to a pro day is really just, you know, seeing those guys get the opportunities and watching them take advantage of it.
Hey, John, so tell us a little bit about Michael Penix. I mean, I feel like J.J. McCarthy is going to be the biggest news or player to watch. It just seems like every week, you know, people have him ranked higher and higher and higher. But what about Penix? Just some of the things. I think he's a very interesting quarterback in this draft. And what were some of the things that you liked about him and, you know, not only during the season, but what you saw today?
Well, obviously, Coach Grubb, you know, likes him a lot. Thinks the world of him, Coach Huff. So we feel like we have great information on him. And, you know, for us, he's just always been a real steady performer. And what a, you know, great job, you know, he did this year. I mean, going to the national championship game and everything. So, yeah, it was great to go see him. He had a real nice workout today. Not getting into comparing, you know, quarterbacks or anything like that with JJ, but just he seems like a really cool person. And so, you know, obviously we know what kind of competitor he is, but yeah, he threw the ball like, you know, I don't know, 9,500 yards today a couple times. He really like threw it downfield real far. So it was a good day for him. So we're all happy for Michael.
John, how tough is it for you to sort of sift through the BS of this time of year, the misdirection, maybe the leaks that are intentional, you know, this team's interested in this team or this player or this team's thinking of moving down? And, you know, a lot of these GMs and teams will use the media to sort of get that out there for misdirection. Is it hard to decipher, or do you just tune it all out? How much do you pay attention to that?
Well, obviously we pay attention to it, and we really feel like our staff does a great job of. So, for instance, if you're an area scout, you know, you're the expert in that area. So, if you have the Midwest, that's really you're in charge of the Midwest. You own it. You know, you should know everybody that's playing in that area, right? And who the prospects are. On the flip side, when you're talking about pro scouting, the guys upstairs and pro scouting, and everybody has specific teams, and they're basically charged with being the expert for their team, meaning that, you know, okay, if you were running this team, what would you think, and how do you evaluate the team? And, you know, they're looking at their cap, they're looking at depth, they're looking at, you know, what does a draft look like? And so, you know, guys like DJ and Armani and again, Nolan, Willie, Trent, all that, you know, Matt, these guys, everybody does a really good job of owning their team. And by the time we get to the draft, we can say, okay, you know, is this real, or, you know, what do you guys think? So just like the area scouts in college have to say, this guy is definitely a Seahawk, okay, and they have conviction about that. The pro scouts have to feel like, okay, you know, this is what is very important to, you know, a specific team, and be the experts in that team, which helps us sift through when you're referring to BS. And then obviously we, you know, having the relationships with people over the years of just being able to understand if, they're just coming at you in a certain manner with, you know, with honesty, or if there's an agenda involved.
Yeah, so there, you know, that I guess I've always thought that that's been overplayed a little bit, sort of the espionage, putting out false signals and things like that. But you sounds like you think that's very much alive, very much in play.
Yeah, I think it definitely is. I think it's still, you know, you see it, on the ticker, or you'll hear things, just on a podcast or a radio show or whatever. I mean, you hear things and you have to pay attention to it. And then do your due diligence and research to try to figure out what's real, what's not.
Yeah. You would never use us that way, would you, John?
No.
I didn't hear a lot. There wasn't a lot of conviction behind that. No.
No.
My legs That's and right. my fingers are crossed.
Yeah. You can use us.
Yeah. We're pawns. Yeah. We're here for you.
No problem.
We'll be props for you.
We're information gatherers, not givers, as a wise man told me.
Hey, the other thing I was curious about is a lot of these sites we refer to when sort of figuring out the finances are like over the cap and you know, things like that, and SpoTrack. How do you pay any attention to those? And if so, how even remotely close are they to the actual number of teams they're dealing with, do you think?
I don't, because we have, you know, three people in the department that are very talented at what they do. And so, you know, we're updated on what people's cash and cap looks like. Now, we don't, the only thing that we don't necessarily know is, you know, what a team's specific cash budget would be in any, you know, given year, or you know, what their, you know, we call them budgeted items, look like. That's, those are things that you know, every team does it a little bit differently. So now we can those guys could, you know, in the salary cap department can kind of like look through that and gauge what these contracts are looking like coming in, whether it's per game roster bonuses or certain incentives that you know, guys may have the ability to hit based on the depth of the position. So we're constantly, you know, studying that. But we're just always constantly trying to figure stuff out in that regard as well.
Hey, John, it seems like your medical part of it, you guys have such a great staff there with Strickland and just the way you run everything. And it seems like you guys, and maybe I'm wrong about this, where do you think you guys lie as far as, or rank, you know, as far as like you're very careful about that, and you have certain standards that it seems like other teams don't have. Are you guys more strict that way? Because, I mean, that only makes sense to me anyway.
Well, I would say cautious, and you know, I think that's every time, every team. I mean, we've talked about evaluating the evaluators too. So, you know, working with the Packers has been different than working with the Chiefs people or the Commanders people or the Redskins at the time. And then, you know, being with, you know, Seattle on two different occasions as well. You know, understanding, you know, how the doctors and the trainers and everybody in sports science feels about a specific player and prospect and what their durability score looks like compared to an orthopedic score or grade, sorry. And just constantly evaluating that process to, you know, I love them. I love all those guys. So to rank it, yeah, number one by far. Hey, same John, thing with our PR. Same thing with our PR department.
Oh, is Dave sitting there?
I mean, holy smokes. Yes.
Dave must be sitting right there.
Right to my right.
He's the best. He's
steely-eyed as well.
Yeah. Everybody aspires to that level.
Everyone fears him as well.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Just in terms of what you're working with right now, you got 7 picks in the draft, and who knows, that could change dramatically the day of the draft, or we'll see how it all ends. But when you look at what you view as holes on the team, spots you got to fill versus the number of draft picks you've got, does it feel like it's even? Do you feel like, okay, we still got more work to do free agency-wise, or we're going to need to accumulate more picks? How do you feel about need versus what you have to fill those holes with?
Yeah, we're going to be, you know, bringing a couple veteran offensive linemen through as you know, this second phase of free agency, and then comparing that to what the draft looks like. In any time you're just drafting for need, you know, that is a need on our team right now. I think it's fairly obvious, but we like some of the young guys, O'Neal, McClendon, Curtis. I mean, there's some guys in there, that younger guys that we really like too, that we've added right when we went to after the first game last year. So there's some young players that you know, a fan may not necessarily know, but that we're excited about in the mix. And then you know, the two guys we had in free agency already, we're excited about those guys, younger guys as well, with Nick and Tremaine. And then, but also then, what does the draft look like? And then what are the different levels? What are the cutoffs? And, you know, how far do you push to go get a guy or to fall back to get into another group of player where there may be three or four guys as compared to the talent level at one specific player or prospect. So we'll be constantly evaluating that over the next 4 weeks here. But yeah, when you talk about holes, I mean, that's, you know, we do pride ourselves on not acting like, okay, we have all the answers here and okay, now our job is done. We're building this team, you know, 365 days a year, and we'll that's never changed, and we'll constantly be doing that. And that's always been our hope, you know, for the fans to know that we're doing that. And I know there can be an uneasiness of, you know, not having things, you know, as solid or, you know, quote unquote fixed, you know, but it's a constant process. And, you know, we're I think Mike said it the other day, we're not playing next week. So we're going to constantly be working on everything.
There you go. The GM, President of Football Operations, John Schneider, with your weekly edition of the John Schneider Show. Our thanks to him. And if you missed any of that conversation, you can find it on our podcast page. Just head to seattlesports.com, click the podcast tab, scroll down to our picture, click on that, and it'll be right there waiting for you. Make sure you click subscribe. That's the key to the entire thing. Coming up, a couple of teams in the division generated some headlines yesterday. We're going to get into that next with Wyman and Bob, live from Edgar's Cantina. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
We are live at Edgar's Cantina here at T-Mobile Park, where the Mariners getting set for game two of their four-game series with the Boston Red Sox. Everybody out there on the field, both teams working out right now on the field, including a random member of the Boston Red Sox on the third base dugout side doing shirtless yoga and shorts out there, as Ryan Divish accurately compared him to what he called a Green Lake bro doing yoga shirtless.
Does that happen
on the grass
at Green Lake?
I guess.
That's a common occurrence there.
Tristan Cassis is the guy out there doing shirtless yoga with a cameraman all surrounding him, like filming every moment of this. But yeah, he's out there doing his shirtless, shoeless, he's just wearing shorts, doing yoga on the grass, and everybody else is in uniform, throwing the ball around, hitting the ball.
That's a guy who does not care what people think of him. No, that's for sure.
Not at all. I love that he said he's going full Green Lake bro. I love it. We love Ryan Divish.
Do people know what that means?
I'm
text us.
I'm guessing some guys live in Green Lake that listen right now aren't taking that well.
Yeah. Oh, do they know that they're the bros, though?
I don't think so. They just think
they're just a normal human being.
That's right.
They're being made fun of by others.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. So if you don't know, if you're shirtless and you're doing yoga,
you're the bro.
You don't know that you're a bro. You're a bro.
You're the bro. A couple things that happened yesterday I thought were pretty interesting. The A's fans, God love them, they're great. They are finding new and interesting ways to protest their owner wanting to move the team to Vegas. They want him just to sell the team because, by all accounts, just a terrible owner. So thousands of fans showed up to go to the game, but they weren't going to the game. They all stayed in the parking lot during the game, and they just partied out in the parking lot, and they had an announced attendance, you know how that goes, of just over 13,000 mm-hmm. for opening day, which is horrible if it were 13,000. But it sounds like the majority of them ended up in just hanging out in the parking lots as a way to protest their owner. And they said there were thousands of signs and things out there that said sell the team. And I feel bad for those fans. I mean, they've hung with that organization for decades and decades in one of the worst stadiums, or probably the worst stadium in all of pro sports.
Yeah.
You've played there. It hasn't changed since your days of playing there. They've done nothing to it. They've got weird carpeting on the desk in the press box, and they've got then they have possum in the ceilings or something like
Or wild animals.
They tried to attack Shannon.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Well, she's almost the same size. They probably thought that was that's not a shot. She's a small person.
Yeah.
But no, it's just a decrepit old building that, you know, he obviously wasn't gonna put anything into and was trying to get the city to pay for it, and now he's moving to Vegas, even though we had those stories earlier in the year that didn't sound like the mayor of Vegas was really that excited, was saying, they should try to work things out in Oakland. You know, so
I like that they even have like a group that's dedicated to protesting their team, the Oakland 68s.
Yeah.
It's an influential fan group. And yeah, and they were also, weren't they giving money to, there's an organization that's, you know, it's students over athletes in Vegas.
Yeah. In Vegas, they don't want the city giving hundreds of millions to the team. They wanted to invest
build
in education.
Stadium. Right.
And yeah.
Build schools instead of stadiums. So they're there supporting it. And yeah, it's kind of sad. One of the guys said, I've been going to these games. This is the first opening day that he's missed since, I think it was like for 22 years or something like that.
Yeah.
But they're dedicated. At least they're doing something about it, man.
I kind of hope that somehow Vegas just decides, you know what, we don't want you to come here. You really should. And by should, you're going to have to work out something with Oakland, because it's just not going to work here. It's weird to have a city that's supposed to have a pro franchise showing up there have that sort of, at best, lukewarm attitude about it. Like, that's not a good thing.
I just remember going there in college when there was I think Canseco had just gotten there, Dave Kingman.
Yeah, McGuire, the Bash Brothers.
McGuire, yeah, I mean, it was just packed all the time. So this is it's kind of sad, man, especially for the diehard Oakland A's fans.
Yeah, it's too bad. We'll see how it plays out, but I appreciate their resolve. I appreciate how committed they are to this whole thing. Meanwhile, Major League Baseball has opened up a formal investigation into the gambling allegations surrounding Shohei Ohtani's former interpreter, and the IRS, now you've got the feds investigating as well, which, as I was reading this, and there are people thinking Major League Baseball is going to try to cover it up, I don't know that you can do that once you get the federal authorities involved. I don't think they're gonna listen to Rob Manfred and go, you know, who's might tell them, hey, can we keep this under wraps? They're gonna go, yeah, no, that's not what we do. So once you get the feds involved, I think the idea of a cover up on Major League Baseball's part, probably not likely.
Yeah, well, what I'm thinking is likely, though, is that they work with authorities and then, you know, find some way for him to do like a public service announcement or something like that, because who did he really hurt? I mean, if he truly is the guy, Ohtani, the guy who was gambling, and he's blaming it all on his interpreter, it's only hurting him, right? And, you know, and I know that they don't want certain things. And I think that, you know, that's why the NFL freaks out over gambling, even though they've gone a long ways towards it. But, you know, they don't want anybody to think that the fix is in.
Well, yeah, you're already seeing I saw somebody on social media retweeting somebody else who said, on this date, Ohtani pitched and, you know, this much money was bet on the game and he was terrible that day, like just implying, well, he had a bad day, a lot of money was bet. Obviously, he was throwing the game. I mean, it just, you know, people want it to be true, so they're going to find a way to, as you talk about torturing the numbers, they'll torture the facts and twist it to where, see, it's obvious, he was throwing the game, look what happened. So, yeah.
Well, I think Major League Baseball, though, I would think the hope that the federal authorities, if this ends up being that kind of a case, that they kind of work together on this, because Ohtani is just, he's just one of the great things that's happened to Major League Baseball in a long time. And just the worldwide recognition and, you know, that he gets, and, you know, that maybe, yeah, I wouldn't, you know, the cover-up thing, probably a little bit late for that, but I think, you know, as far as finding some kind of way where you're not kicking Ohtani out or putting him in jail or, you know, fining him a ridiculous amount of money, and that he's able to kind of keep his good standing in Major League Baseball, because I think he's important to the game.
Well, and that's if he's guilty. There seems to be a certain segment of the fan base that wants him to be guilty. I'm not sure why that would be. Like, he's
I don't want him to.
He's a likable guy. Like, why would it, I could see if there was somebody who was just came off as a jerk, and you're like, man, I hope he's guilty. He gets what he deserves.
Oh no.
Why for those that are rooting? We've had people texted, of course he's guilty. Really? Based on what? What is it you know that the rest of the world doesn't know at this point?
Well, I just think people think, and I'm kind of one of them, that it sounds very fishy that all of a sudden his interpreter is doing this instead of him. And I don't think that because I think he's a bad person. I just think he's a normal person, you know, that, but you know, like you said, his other teammates said he doesn't even pay any attention to other sports, but that's almost worse because then it's like he's for sure betting on baseball and probably shouldn't be doing that.
Well, the bookie that was in the center of this whole thing, the one that was being investigated, said none of the bets were placed on baseball.
Okay.
So, and he never met Otani. He never, so who knows? It's again, we played that clip from Greenberg yesterday talking about, well, how come he didn't call the authorities? Oh, there's the ball.
We'll get to it again shortly, actually.
Huh? Oh, okay.
We'll get to it again in a second.
Yeah, I felt like he kind of had that twisted. So, we'll see. But the idea of Major League Baseball is going to cover this up, I don't think that would happen either way. I think that things like that just impossible to keep a secret. But now that the federal authorities are involved, that's making it even less likely. All right, coming up, two strange ideas have us saying, why, man? That's coming up next as we continue live from Edgar's Cantina at T-Mobile Park. It's Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports on 710.
Why, man? Why?
Lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
He's a habitual line stepper.
What were you thinking? What are you doing?
Why are you the way that you are?
It's the Why Man of the Week.
You're weirding me out, Dave. What's going on?
I'm going, look at me. You're looking at me? What did I do?
I'm like,
did
I put on the wrong headsets again?
No, I'm looking. You got both cans on.
Oh.
Remember, you typically do one.
Oh, yeah. Well, with these headset mics, I'll wear them both. But when we're in studio, apparently that drove somebody nuts on the text toy. Said, I hate that Salk and Bob wear their headsets with one ear off and one on. Put it on. I stopped watching the stream. And I was like, no.
How could that bother somebody that much?
Because they're miserable people. I don't know.
But they're really looking for it. I mean, I bet you 90% of people are like, I don't even pay attention to that.
Yeah, it's an odd thing to
I'm
get
just
worked
listening
up about.
To the brilliant things that are coming out of Bob's mouth. You know?
We're giving you gold every day, and you're worried about what our headsets are doing? Come on. hey, coming up at the top of the hour, our guy John Morosi will join us, talk some baseball with him, but it is time for Why Man, which is presented by Mazda of Everett. We were just making reference to this moments ago. This is Mike Greenberg with his take on Shohei Ohtani and the belief that he's lying.
His story makes no sense. Nothing is less believable than the version of events that Team Ohtani is trying to present here. If we are to believe the version of events that Shohei Ohtani is now offering us, he found out, to his great shock, that his longtime best friend had stolen $4.5 million from him and wire transferred it $500,000 at a time with no one's knowledge, which is ludicrous. Let's even live in a world where that could happen, which it can't. What's the first thing you do? You contact law enforcement, right? You bring in the authorities. Whoever it is, one calls. I don't know. I've never had $4.5 million stolen from me. But if I did, I would definitely call someone. But when they ask Shohei Ohtani, well, who have you contacted about this? The answer is they refuse to talk about it. They will not tell you who they've contacted. And the reason is they never contacted anybody because this isn't what happened here.
Because they contacted him, donkey. That's the story that came out. There was an operation to bust the bookie that was running this whole thing, and they got to him, and that's how the story came out. And then they saw the wire transfers with his name and brought it to his attention. So would he then in turn call the authorities again, who just informed him of what was uncovered there?
I don't know if that's how it went down. I don't know if he has alerts that, you know, come up with a certain amount that he probably should have paid attention to. This is one of those stories, first of all, that we find ourselves talking about off the air.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I just think it's, he's really important to Major League Baseball. I mean, he's become that guy. So, but I don't know. I'm with Greeny on this one. I just feel like that it was. I feel like that was the alibi, you know, that the interpreter did this without me knowing, and. I don't know. I'm just being. I think he's a really great man and everything, but to me, there's just something that kind of stinks about that. That you know, and I don't know about the timing as far as you know contacting the authorities, but to me, it just feels like no, that was him, and that's his alibi is to blame the interpreter.
If the interpreter's taking the fall for him, he must be a really good friend because. You're talking about embezzlement. This isn't, hey, yeah. This guy stole a bat out of my locker and sold it, or an autographed mitt and sold it on eBay. This is $4.5 million. You've got the federal authorities involved with this. This guy's going to be looking at prison time.
Well, exactly. And so
I don't know that. I mean, maybe he's a friend unlike any that I would ever beat anybody, because I can tell you I'm not going to prison for anybody. But yeah, that seems as far fetched. To me is anything Greeny's talking about. And again, according to the story that came out, he's got it wrong about, well, why didn't you contact somebody? Well, because he was contacted. They were running a sting on that bookmaker, and that's how it came to light. So,
well, were they contacted like months later?
Well, the timing of the contact has not been established. I didn't see,
because if it
they found out on a Friday and they called him that day, the next day, I have no idea.
Yeah, so I mean, that's where the discrepancy lies. There is, you know, when were they contacted? But anyway, yeah, I mean, because you would think, and if it's like 2-3 months, like how do you not know that $4.5 million has gone from your account? I know he makes a ton of money, but yeah. So, but I don't know. I don't want it to be true. I feel like it was Ohtani that was doing the gambling, but. I don't want it to be true, just because he seems like such a good dude and he's such a good person for baseball, and maybe he's naive. But I would think the MLB, if it is federal, that they'll work something out where it's not like he has to do time or get kicked out of the league or anything like that. You know, maybe do some, you know, charitable work or put across a message that they want, something like that.
Well, being kicked out of the league will be up to MLB. That won't be up to the feds. But I just the idea of a cover-up at this point with everybody involved is equally far-fetched. I don't think you know, people saying, oh, well, they're gonna go out of their way to make sure he's not implicated. Well, it's at this point, it's kind of out of MLB's hands. They're gonna do their own investigation in terms of whatever punishment may come if he's indeed guilty. But in the other part, if he is indeed guilty, will be the IRS and the feds that are involved with it. So,
yeah, I understand that. But, you know, Major League Baseball, they have to have they're going to have their rules as well. So, but I would just think that they would go easy on him.
Number two, this comes courtesy of Tracy Wolfson describing Dan Hurley's insane superstition.
Dan Hurley is the king of superstition, especially on game day. He has to have 8 M&Ms before every game. He has to have a cup of bulletproof coffee on the sidelines at all times, and do not knock it over. And he has to wear the same suit and socks and shoes and, yes, the same Red Dragon underwear. And don't worry, it is clean. His wife, Andrea, travels with a portable washing machine. I mean, you can't make that up, Ian.
And apparently they travel a Maytag repairman with them as part of the crew. No, they do not. Who has a portable washing machine? I didn't even know that existed.
I'm with him. Never heard of a portable washing machine before this, or Red Dragon underwear. And in Lefko researched it. You said that's a brand?
No. Wyman research.
Yeah, I did.
Oh.
I wasn't going to do that.
Because everybody else had a company computer, and mine's my own personal one, in case it was something kind of, all of a sudden it starts, you know, blaring, porn freak.
All of a sudden the pop-up window started coming up.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's a brand?
Yeah, apparently it's a brand of underwear. I don't know why he had to share that with us, because now...
And we got Wyman a birthday present.
Here's your Red Dragon underwear.
Being delivered right now.
I'll wear them on the outside.
Yeah, the rest of it was, as Lefko would say, oddly specific. Yeah. Eight M&Ms, a cup of bulletproof coffee. Is that, I assume, a brand name?
What color M&Ms? That's where I'm hung up.
Yeah, I don't know. If he's that particular that it has to be 8, I've got to believe it's got to be specific colors, or, you know, maybe so. It's 2 of this color, 2 of this color, or 4 of this one, 4 of that one. It's got to be equal.
Yeah, there has to be something going on.
And the same suit, and then, yeah, the portable washing machine is still Have to look that up during the break, see what that looks like. Traveling with a portable washing machine.
Yeah, I wonder, you ever wash your socks or anything in the sink, like at a hotel or anything like that, and then hang it up to dry?
No, I do not. I bring enough to clean ones each day.
I've never done that either, but I know that some people will do that.
Yeah. I guess in an emergency situation I would, but I overpack.
Yeah, this happened to me when we went to Tennessee this year. I forgot my underwear, and so I went to the store.
You didn't borrow any from somebody?
Yeah, I asked one of my buddies to bring me some, and he's like, we're not that tight.
We're not that cool, man.
No, I did not ask him.
All right, coming up, a lot to catch up with John Morosi in terms of baseball, everything happening around opening weekend. He's going to join us next with Wyman and Bob as we continue live from Edgar's Cantina at T-Mobile Park. This is Seattle Sports on 710.